You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. Get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, a Kyrie when he make a trade, and nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packett, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game, it's very important, Millie.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. I want to thank you for making this part of your daily routine, Monday through Friday, wherever you are, whatever you're doing. We're here, the Rain and Jays, John Corrales, Jay King. If you're not following us, if you're new to the podcast, Twitter is our preferred place to follow us. I'm at @RedsArmy_John. Jay is at @ByJKing. Basketball, for some reason, has just adopted Twitter as its own, and we're all on Twitter. We don't Facebook. We don't do all that other stuff. Just tweet us. So that's us. Me, Jay, we're here. It's the halftime show, like the season halftime show, and we're going to talk about what's real, what's not, projections, things we've seen, things we might see. The Celtics have played the first, quote-unquote, half of their season, and now they've got 4 days off before this London game. So we're getting creative, Jay. And so your initial thoughts of the first half of the season.
Kyrie Irving fits, and Jason Tatum is a murderer. And the defense is way better than I thought it was going to be. Those would be the three biggest, I think.
Specifically using the word murderer?
Yes. He's a murderer. He is a murderer.
I'm just saying that because you got shit on Twitter for saying that.
I got some heat for calling him a murderer, but he's a murderer.
It's like, figurative. It's not for real.
Obviously, I don't mean he's Aaron Hernandez out here, but but he does Aaron Hernandez some defenses.
Sure. We'll go with that. The Celtics have played 43 games. So they're just a couple of games past the half point of their schedule. They are 33-10, and just to show how many games they've played, they lead the Toronto Raptors by 3 games. They are tied in the loss column. They have 6 more wins than the Raptors. I just love that statistic. It just shows how much the Celtics have played, and now they play the remaining 39 games over the next few months. There's a lot of rest. So, Jay, they are on a pace to win about 63 games. Do the Celtics win more than 60 games, 60 or more games this season?
I don't think so. I mean, when you look at what they've done so far, they've outpaced, I think, the way they've played. Like, they've won games that they shouldn't have. They've come back from so many huge deficits. They really shouldn't be exactly where they are right now. I think they'll win somewhere between 55 and 60. But to expect them to be on the same pace for the rest of the year, I think would be tough. That's not saying that they're not for real. Like, they're good. They're really good. Kyrie Irving, like I said, he fits. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown have been revelations. Al Horford has never played better than he has this season. There are a lot of things that are going right for the Celtics. They picked up Daniel Tice and Shane Larkin and Semi Ojeleye, who have all had very good games. They're all solid pickups for what they were. But at the same time, like, to expect them to repeat that over the second half of the season, I don't think is fair, given what their point differential is right now. They don't project as a 60-plus win team with point differential, but who knows, man? I mean, they've done it so far, and they won't. They'll have more rest during the second half of the season. They will play a better schedule, like as far as a tougher schedule as far as the opponents they're playing in the second half of the season. But I mean, they already beat the Cavs. They beat the Warriors. They beat the Rockets. Like, they're capable of beating a good team. They're a very good team, maybe a great team, and they've done it all without Gordon Hayward, which is crazy.
It is nuts. Look, they do still have a West Coast swing. They got to go. They got to go to Golden State. They got to go to Houston. Teams they've beaten to their credit, but they have to go to their place now, and those teams will want revenge, and I'm sure they will do everything they can to exact that revenge. I don't think Houston blows a lead. I don't think Golden State blows a lead like they did. They got to play Denver in that altitude. There are a lot of games out west that they will go and maybe struggle with. They have a tough second half, I think, just strength of schedule. But they can go something like 26 and 13 and still get close to 60 wins. I think get 59 wins. If they go 26 and 13 in the second half, they get 59 wins, which is amazing because that's nowhere near the pace that they've played. That's a much more, we'll say, realistic, slow down pace, whatever you want to say. But the Celtics have won more than 75% of their games. So even if they slow down, they're going to win in the high 50s, which is amazing after losing Gordon Hayward.
Yeah, so let's take it piece by piece. Let's start with Kyrie Irving, who I think was the most fascinating part of the Celtics coming into the season. What has been your reaction to what Kyrie has been versus what your expectations were coming into the season?
I think Kyrie's first half of the season is like in two parts. The first part of the season, his efficiency was very high, and he wasn't doing some of the things that we thought he would be doing. The second half of the season, the second quarter, he reverted to some old habits. And if you look at the numbers, overall, he is kind of just basically Kyrie Irving. That's a slightly more efficient version of what he has been. So I think that with some more rest and more practice and more Brad Stevens guidance, he will kind of go back, I think, a little bit to more of what he was at the first part of the season. So what I expect moving forward is kind of an in-between of what we saw in the first quarter and the second quarter. What I'm hoping for is fewer mid-range shots. I think in that December stretch where everybody was tired and they were playing a lot of games and there weren't a lot of practices, he was going back to some old habits, which was settling for a lot of mid-range jumpers on the right side of the floor. And if you look at his shot charts for his entire career, mid-range jumpers on the right side of the floor are his kind of fallback shot. He thinks he can hit that every time. He doesn't. He takes a lot of them. It's not the most efficient shot. So moving forward, I expect Kyrie to kind of get away from that a little bit more, shoot a little bit more threes, run a lot more pick and roll with Al Horford. Maybe they will run some more action that gets Jason Tatum involved. So I expect at the end for Kyrie to be kind of a souped up version of what he was last year in Cleveland, a little more efficient, and I think he kind of gets away from some of those bad habits. But I like what I've seen. I'm surprised a little bit from what I've seen. His defense has been a lot better, and we've seen him, I think, where he's made mistakes, especially I saw it a few times in that Brooklyn game. He made mistakes, he screwed up, he came back, and he made a play on the defensive end. So he has that in him. I think we'll see a little bit more of that, and I think moving forward, that's what we can expect. A little bit more efficient, a couple more defensive plays than we're used to, nothing shockingly out of character, but a little bit more of an enhanced version of Kyrie Irving.
Okay, two main takeaways from me. One, he's tried. He's really tried to fit.
I agree.
He has tried to embrace what Brad Stevens has taught him. He has tried to be a good teammate. he has tried to do all the things you'd want from him. And nobody knew really what he was going to do in that sense after he forced his way out of Cleveland. And there were the reports that he didn't even talk to a lot of his teammates during the playoff run. Like, he was very disgruntled. He had a lot of question marks, I think, about whether he would accept what the Celtics wanted him to do. And I don't think that has been an issue at all. The other thing is he's changed a little bit. If you look at what he was in Cleveland, the Celtics offense is way better with him, much better. 10 points per 100 possessions better. Like, he works well with Al Horford. He's helping Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown get easy shots. When he's on the court, they're much better off offensively. Defensively, you can survive with Kyrie Irving. And they have the number one defense right now. He hasn't been an elite defender, but he's been good enough. And I think that was a change. And his hustle plays. Like, the other night, they're in Brooklyn in an absolute stone fight. Like, just throwing rocks at each other. And Kyrie Irving misses a shot, gets his own rebound, finds Jason Tatum in the corner to go ahead by four. So I think everything's promising from what he's done. And not just the fact that they've won a ton of games, and statistically he's been at least what he was before, probably a little better. But I think just the mentality that he's brought to it is the important thing. And then I don't think you're going to see the Kyrie Irving completely unleashed until you see Gordon Hayward come back, and until you get to see him and Al Horford and Kyrie, and all of a sudden you can't send all those double teams to Kyrie Irving anymore. And then Jason Tatum's going to develop, and Jaylen Brown's going to develop. And all of a sudden that starting lineup is going to be hell. Like, I don't think enough people are talking about how ridiculous that starting lineup is going to be when Gordon Hayward returns. When you have Gordon Hayward instead of Aaron Baines, and Jason Tatum's a year older, and Jaylen Brown's a year older, and Kyrie and Al Horford have even more chemistry than they've had, that could be a five-man lineup that has 40% three-point shooters. three or four all-stars. Like, honestly, it could be just one of the most dynamic, most explosive, best lineups in the league. And so I think you'll see Kyrie reach another level once that happens. I think Gordon Hayward will allow him to do things that he hasn't been able to do yet, because teams are allowed to really send a lot of pressure to him. And I think Gordon Hayward's going to make everything easier for everybody. But Kyrie, from most standpoints, has been really good. And he's always been really good. It's not a surprise that he's really good. And I think it's funny that people act like it's a surprise that he's been very good for the Celtics. Like, this is a guy who's 25 years old. He's reached four All-Star teams. He's won an Olympic gold medal. He's hit the game-winning shot in Game 7 of the Finals. He's averaged damn near 30 points in two different NBA Finals series. Like, he's an absolute killer. And the fact that he's really good in a system that fits him and with a really good team isn't surprising at all. I think some people were surprised by the fact that Kyrie Irving fit in well, but to me, it's no surprise that he's done what he's done. Maybe the defense is a little surprising, but everything else is kind of on par. And then the fact that he's been a really good teammate and everything like that, I think, is the most promising part of it. He really wants to make things work.
Well, I think one of the things that we've seen from Kyrie this season is, I guess, a maturity that is advanced from when he was in Cleveland. So, and by that, you see the, like in that article with Jackie McMullen, he kind of opened himself up to the past, maybe missteps that he's made. And he's shown that in recent days. He had an interview the other day where he was talking about the big picture stuff and how he used to be so caught up in a one bad shooting night. He's not caught up in bad shooting nights anymore. And I think the process of going through requesting the trade and the process of going through getting to a new team, learning new teammates, trusting a coach, having a coach like Brad Stevens, who he fully can trust immediately. You know, you saw in that Jackie Mack article how he kind of shot back at Tyronn Lue, and I just don't know. I don't know if he would do that to Brad Stevens. I don't know if Brad Stevens would accept that as a comeback. So I think we're seeing a 25-year-old guy who is maturing and advancing and just doing normal things in some ways that a guy in his mid-20s would do. Like I've said, look, when I was in my mid-20s, I don't want to be held responsible for some of the things that I did when I was in my mid-20s. And you grow and you mature and you act differently and you take on different responsibilities. And I think he's accepting a lot of that stuff. And some of what we're seeing is him just kind of saying, okay, yeah, some of the stuff I did before in my career, I can't do that anymore. I've got to grow up. So I commend Kyrie for having that attitude.
Yeah, I think just being featured differently matters. Like the Celtics aren't going to ask him to just isolate. And obviously, sometimes he's going to isolate because he's a really freaking good isolation player. And he's done it still a pretty high percentage of the time. The Celtics, like if you look at their numbers, their passes are down. Their assists are down. A lot of the passing numbers are down. And I don't blame that all on Kyrie. Like, this is just a more one-on-one oriented team. Whether it's Marcus Morris or Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown sometimes. Like, they just have more guys that can kind of go and get their own or want to go and get their own than they did last year. And so it's not all on Kyrie. But if you look at the numbers, those are all down. But just the way they use him is different. Like, he's not going to be just standing in the corner and isolating against a set defense. And he's not going to have just one-on-one. It's going to be double teams because he doesn't have LeBron James anymore. I think at first it was almost like a culture shock to him. Really it was. Like, they're sending double teams now. I'm getting double teams all the time. I have to learn how to deal with this.
Yeah.
And I think at first, like the first few games, I don't think he handled it that well. And maybe that was just me overreacting to a small sample size. Maybe it was just him kind of getting it acclimated to the new system, to his new teammates, to everything else. The shock of losing Gordon Hayward the first day kind of changing what the Celtics did. But those first few games, I didn't think he handled double teams well. And ever since then, he's been very open to passing out of double teams most of the time. Like, he's not going to take on two guys a lot. He's going to make the smart pass, and he's going to let Horford continue the offense and be a playmaker, and he's going to find Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown, and he's tried, and he's done a good job, and he's been great. Like, he's what does he have more All-Star votes than like the next three guards in the Eastern Conference?
That's nuts.
It is nuts, but he's been the best guard in the Eastern Conference, right? Like, DeMar DeRozan,
could
probably argue, has been better.
DeRozan's been pretty good. But you know,
I don't think anyone else you could argue, really, could you?
As far as a guard, no.
Yeah.
No. Because other guys.
And obviously, like, LeBron James is kind of a guard. Giannis is sort of a guard.
But they're forwards. Like, they're listed as forwards. Go by what they're listed as. And there aren't a lot of guards that have done what Kyrie has done. So, no, he's having an amazing season. His, by most measures, the eye test, statistically, he's having a better season than he has before. And I know people like Nick Wright at the beginning, after a few weeks, were saying, oh, he's worse. Oh, my God.
And you know what? Nick Wright got a lot of heat for that. I think you even gave him heat. But I understood it. For like the first few weeks,
but that's just
Kyrie's efficiency was really low.
Yeah, but that was just a few weeks. Like, but
Kyrie was getting a lot of credit because the Celtics were winning a ton of games at that point, and he had like a 53% true shooting, and it was like he probably at that point didn't deserve all the credit that he was getting.
Right,
I was actually with Nick Wright. Since then,
you
Kyrie
can never say that. You can
like,
never say
he
that.
Then.
You can never be with Nick Wright on basketball.
He went on a month or whatever.
That's it.
He was just ridiculous.
We're looking for a new Rain and Jay. If your name is Jay and you know basketball, Jay King is off. You cannot be with Nick Wright on anything basketball. It's just It's an overreaction. It's a total overreaction. And yeah, maybe he got a little bit of the credit, but that was just so, you know, we know, sample size. You can't have that level of a reaction to the small sample size. Now we know, we see it. He's adjusted. And maybe that's part of my problem with this whole media landscape right now. After a week, people are starting to rank MVP candidates after a week or two. Like, really? Are you kidding me? Enough of that shit. But whatever. I'm not going to go down that road, because that's not today's podcast.
Let's move to something happier.
Let's not do that.
Let's move to Jason Tatum.
Let's go on to
Jason Tatum. And obviously he's been great. He's been far better than anyone has anticipated. What do you hope is the next step for him?
I think the next step that I hope for and that I have seen is that level of aggression. And I think we saw it in that Brooklyn game where he turned it on, and we've seen it recently. I feel like he's dunking on a lot more people recently. And I see him kind of dribbling and kind of looking for his own shot a little bit more, rather than just waiting for Kyrie and Al Horford to do their thing and get some overflow, a shot when somebody overreacts to what they're doing.
He's played mean lately.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like his progression, we're seeing kind of a rapid progression for him. That meanness, that attitude, like, he dunked on Karl Anthony Towns and was running back and gave like a little wink. Like, that's a badass move right there.
That was a badass move.
You dunk on Cat and come back and you're winking on your way back up the floor? That's dope. That's like killer shit right there. When you say murderer, that's a basketball murderer right there. Like, that's crazy. It's winking season, absolutely. Like, that's the type of thing I want to see more of. So when it comes to Tatum, and look, we've got more practices, like all of this stuff that we're talking about, more time to kind of scheme a little bit. Brad Stevens has said, kind of hinted, that that's something they're going to be focused on. When a coach and a team tells a kid who's 19, oh, by the way, have we mentioned that he's 19 years old? You say, hey, kid, we're going to run some shit for you. That's pretty good. That pumps up your ego. And I'm not trying to get his ego so gassed up that it gets out of control, but he's got to get that aggressiveness.
I thought it was so funny when someone asked Brad, is this the next step in Tatum's evolution to be a crunch time scorer? Brad was just shaking his head before the question was even done. Like no, that's not the next step in his evolution. Like, he walked into the NBA able to do that, actually. And it's true. Like, he's from day one, he's been making big shots. From day one, he's been doing important things for the Celtics. The attitude, I think I can remember Paul Pierce talking about the Tatum comparison before the season. And Paul Pierce said, yeah, he's got a lot of skills. Yeah, some of the things he does remind me of what I used to do, like the way he, you know, changes pace and creates space and all that stuff. And he said, what's going to really determine whether he reaches that level is whether he gets that killer attitude. And like you said, I think he's kind of developing that. I think he's realizing, like, God damn, like, I can really murder these guys.
Yeah.
And you can see him becoming more and more comfortable. And like, he treated Damari Carroll, like, poor Damari Carroll it was like he was just barely an NBA caliber player, like not even an NBA caliber player. He blocked him several times. Like, he was contesting with one hand and then swiping through with the other hand, which was like just outrageous. You don't see that very often where a guy does that. And then at the end, you know, Celtics fall behind by one with a minute and a half left. Oh, here's a dunk. Oh, here's a three. Oh, now the Celtics are up by four and it's over. And I just think there's so much more to unlock for Jason Tatum, because he has every single skill. Every single skill. He can post up. He can hit threes. He's his off the dribble game. He's so elusive in transition. Oh, well, he's going to go by anyone. He's got a killer in and out move that just loses people. He literally has every single skill you'd want, ball handling, everything, footwork, whatever it is, he's got it. And as long as that attitude is there, and we're seeing it, the wink, he's just becoming, he's growing into an assassin. And yeah. I don't think he'll ever be like the type of like an Isaiah Thomas type, like flexing your face and point at the wrist and all that shit. But he's becoming like the quiet assassin, and it's happening so quickly. Like this kid's 19 years old. He's halfway through his rookie season. People keep talking about the rookie wall, and he's like, rookie wall, huh?
Yeah. Like, there's the wall.
Good joke, guys.
That's a nice one. Yeah. One of the things, like, when it comes to Tatum, one of my favorite things to say about Tatum is this is the worst he's ever going to play. Like, if he never improves, this is awesome. But he's going to improve. All of these things that he's doing, he's going to improve. So all of the things that we're seeing now through the first 43 games of the season, this is the worst he's ever going to play, which is scary. Like, he's gonna become a much more deadly shooter. He's going to find little things. Like, what he hasn't done are the little kind of shoulder fakes, the little hesitation moves that freeze a player and then open him up. Like, right now, he's just kind of catching and going, or, you know, attacking a dog in the background, or he's kind of reacting to things. And only recently has he been dictating things. And so, you know what I'm talking about. And this is the Paul Pierce element of the game. That little catch, kind of freeze a guy, slight hesitate. It's not even an up fake. It's just that little hesitation, that little, you move your shoulders an inch to get a guy to react to that flinch, and you're moving the other way. So while the defender is reacting to that one move that you've done, you're already past him. And it's that just tiny head, eye, shoulder fake. And it's not a full up fake. It's just a little quick boom, boom. You do one thing and he reacts and you're gone. That's the next iteration of Tatum's game. Just taking a guy and saying, you know what? I've driven left on you twice. I'm going to give you a little just hesitation. Now I'm going to go right. And now you're screwed, because now I look the same to you as a defender, but now I've done two different things and you don't know what I'm going to do. And now you're my toy. Like, that's the next part of Tatum's game. And it's coming in his rookie season. We're just starting to see it. So, I'm super excited. Like, Tatum is just such an exciting player. And the Celtics basically got paid to take him. The Lakers are so bad that the Celtics could get a top five pick in this upcoming draft for the right to take Jason Tatum, who is maybe the best player in that draft class, or at the very least, one of the best players in a very loaded draft class, because there's a lot of great players in last year's draft. So,
yeah, and what I think is important about Tatum too is, like, as good as Al Horford and Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward are, they're not good enough alone to compete against the top teams like Golden State. Like, those three guys, they're not good enough. They needed somebody else. And so I think Tatum evolving the way he has, and not evolving because he arrived like this, Tatum being the way he has changes things for the Celtics. It potentially lifts their ceiling. It gives them another guy who he might be their best player in a few years. Like, he could be better than Kyrie. He could be better than everybody on their team in a few years. And to have another guy like that on the roster just changes – it could change everything. And like you said, there could be another top five pick. Gordon Hayward's coming back. There are a lot of ways that the Celtics are going to improve in the future. But I think Tatum's development and Tatum's emergence right away has been the most significant of all of those, because he is a franchise changer. This kid is – he's no normal rookie. He is the type of guy who lifts your franchise from one rung to a rung, like, way above. And Jaylen Brown, too, to a different extent. Jaylen Brown's not at the same level as Jason Tatum. He doesn't have the same skills. But Jaylen Brown at 21, he's better than I thought he was going to be this year. He's come a long way from where he was as a rookie. And especially as a shooter, he's knocking down three-pointers. Got to work on the free throws, but that might just be mental. But those two guys together are really lifting things. And once Gordon Hayward gets back, like I said, to have those five guys, and as young as they are, that's a really damn good core. And it's a core that's going to keep getting better, and especially as Tatum reaches a new level. So those guys are just – they've been special, man. For young guys to play two ways the way Brown and Tatum have, it's been really special.
I want to take a minute to say also special is the New England Patriots season. And if you are enjoying what the Patriots are doing, even with that ESPN story, I feel like this is going to be another us against the world type of thing. And you should listen to the Locked On Patriots podcast to get the full reaction to that ESPN takedown of the Patriots and what's going to happen next. It's Brady, it's Belichick, it's Bob Kraft against the world. And this past weekend was the wild card weekend. And of course the Patriots weren't playing because they're the Patriots. They get a first round bye every year. So go check out the Locked On Patriots podcast because they've got the whole thing ready for you. They get all the breakdowns, reactions to that stupid story. And then now you know what the Patriots are up against the next weekend. I think it's Tennessee. And so they've got the whole thing broken down for you. So follow Locked On Patriots, the same place you followed the Locked On Celtics podcast. Go search for them everywhere you find podcasts. If you're a football fan, if you're not a Patriots fan, follow your favorite team. There's a Locked On podcast for every NFL team, just like there's one for every NBA team. So go find them where you found us. Okay. I want to ask you, Jay, we've brought his name up a bunch in this podcast, but what's the possibility, do you think, Gordon Hayward makes a return at some point during the either regular season or during the playoff run?
When he first got injured, I thought there was no chance. When the Celtics received the disabled player exception, I thought there was no chance because that means an NBA appointed doctor said that there's whatever the wording is, it's highly likely that he's going to miss the rest of the season through the playoffs. Now, I mean, he got out of the boot. He's walking around, looks pretty good doing it. It wouldn't shock me if he comes back before the end of the season. But then the thing is, like, is he going to be healthy? And is he gonna be able to make an impact? And how soon does he come back? If is it in the regular season? Does he have time to get stronger? Does he have time to work with a roster that he's only played 5 minutes with? Does he have time to get himself acclimated, to get stronger, to get through the fear of playing again? Because there might be something mental after the fall that he took. I know that he's had some tough times while he's recovered. So there's a lot that goes into it. It wouldn't shock me if he plays again this season, but I also wouldn't be shocked if he doesn't play again this season. And again, if he comes back in the playoffs, I think all of a sudden that could potentially hurt you, because then you're bringing in the star who's not going to be himself because he hasn't played in a long time and because he had this injury. And he's still rehabilitating. Like I said, the mental thing is still there. If he comes back, does that help you? Does that hurt you? To me, the perfect scenario for the Celtics would be he comes back with a couple weeks left in the regular season, gets to play, you know, 3, 4, 5 games and see where he's at, get a little stronger, and then this Brad Stevens can figure out how to use him. Other players can figure out how to play with him again. And the thing is, he's really easy to play with. Like, he has so many skills. He's a great passer. He's gonna free up a lot for a lot of players when he's right. But how right is he going to be if he is able to play this season? And so there are a lot of questions, even if he does come back, about how much it will impact the Celtics.
Well, I'm a big proponent of if a guy's ready, he's ready. And I'm thinking Hayward may be ready at some point in March or April. So let's just say he's ready for the second round of the playoffs. What do you think about the possibility of just throwing Hayward in as a guy off of the bench in to start the second round of the playoffs? So same starting lineup. Hayward comes in and he plays 20 to 25 minutes a game, and he's coming off the bench, starting a second quarter or whatever. I think that would be the best case scenario, because you don't have to start him. You're just getting limited minutes because his cardio might not be there and it takes a little while. I think he could be an immensely valuable guy in the second round of the playoffs, conference finals, and then by that point, NBA finals, really, honestly. He would be amazing off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. The thing that about his injury that I think has hurt the Celtics maybe the most is the fact that they were counting on Gordon Hayward, I think, to buoy bench units. And he was going to be the playmaker, I think, for the bench. I imagine they were going to stagger Kyrie and Hayward, and Hayward was going to be the guy who was out there scoring buckets and making plays and kind of loosening things up for the second unit. And the Celtics second unit hasn't always scored. And if you can add Hayward to that group and he's pretty close to what he's always been, then yes, of course, that helps a ton. It all depends on what he is and how healthy he is, how much he's moving, how comfortable he is with his movements, how rusty he is. Like, there are so many factors that will go into how effective he is. But yeah, I mean, theoretically, he'd be amazing for the second unit. It's just all a matter of how strong he can get that leg and how strong he can get his wind and how strong he can get mentally after really what was a scary, scary fall.
All right, that's all theoretical. Let's go back to actual. And a guy that I'm not sure people expected to have this kind of leap, but I really want to single out Jaylen Brown, because his production, his minutes have doubled. And
I just, before you continue, I just want to shout out Al Horford, who's never talked about enough, and I just wanted to shout him out because we're not going to spend enough time on him in this podcast.
No, it's true. It's true. Al Horford. and I mean, I was going to talk about him a little bit later, but let's just mention him now. His assist percentage is way, way up. His three-point shooting percentage is way, way up. And he's the type of guy who doesn't care about his personal production. But if you look at the advanced numbers, he's doing a ton to make the Celtics very, very good. And all of the lineups with him on the floor are great, and the lineups with him off the floor tend to not be so great. So, yeah, Al Horford is amazing. And unless you're a former major league shortstop / second baseman, you understand that.
Yes. Yes. Shout out to Lou Merlone.
Thanks. So back to Jaylen Brown, who has been a more than capable replacement for Avery Bradley. he has maybe obviously not done some of the individual defensive things that Avery did, but he is insanely capable of playing very good defense and also providing an offensive punch. And I just think that not a lot of people expected Jalen to be what he is now. And I think the leap that he's taken from year one to year two is very, very encouraging, because guys who take that leap from year one to year two generally take a big leap from year two to year three. So I think Jalen is a guy that we can really be excited about. Everybody's excited about Tatum moving forward, but Brown is a guy that is very much a student of the game, very much aware of what he needs to do. And I think that year one to year two jump is indicative of what we might be able to expect from year two to year three.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously he's made a huge jump, and he works really hard, and he's as athletic and physically gifted as only a few guys in the NBA are. Like, he is an elite, elite athlete. To me, what's been most impressive about him is his consistency. Even when his shot isn't there, he's typically giving the Celtics rebounding. He's typically giving the Celtics defense. He's guarding point guards sometimes. He's guarding wings. He's guarding the Kevin Durant types. He's guarding all the guys that the great defenders have to guard. And he's doing it at 21. And he's doing it a year after, really, he had some DNPs in the playoffs last year. Like, when the Celtics wanted to go small in the playoffs, they went with Gerald Green instead of Jaylen Brown. And obviously, Gerald Green has had some monster, monster games. But Jaylen Brown has just come a long way in a short time. And it's crazy, because I thought the Celtics would miss Jay Crowder so much. And because Jason Tatum has been so damn good, and because Jaylen Brown has been so damn ready, the Celtics, they haven't missed him at all. Those two guys are both better than Jay Crowder right now. So it's been really impressive what those guys have done at their age. And Jaylen Brown from year one to year two, especially the shooting, like, he went from a guy coming out of the draft who was, you know, seen as a non-shooter, seen as a guy who wasn't going to help your spacing, who potentially hurt your spacing, who was just an athlete. And he's turned himself into a pretty knockdown shooter, which is really, really impressive.
He was seen as a guy by one of these two co-hosts that may not be able to shoot. And I will say it wasn't me.
That was me?
It was you.
Yeah. Shout out to me, man. Very wrong.
I just remember you saying something about his college numbers,
analytics. He was like by analytics, he shouldn't have even gotten drafted. Like, that's how bad he was in the advanced numbers. Obviously there are different things that go into scouting, and goddamn.
I just want to bust your balls on that one.
No, I deserve it. I deserve it. When you're wrong, you're wrong.
Yeah, sure. We've been going for a while, so let's wrap this up just quickly with a mention of the bench and the production of Semi Ojeleye, Shane Larkin, Daniel Tice. I mean, those guys in the first half of the season have shown a strong ability to contribute. And that goes into a related conversation about Brad Stevens, who has kept the minutes down for Al Horford, Kyrie Irving. Minutes per game, those guys are at the bottom end of the top 50 in the NBA. So the Celtics have, I think, 10 or 11 guys who have double-digit minutes per game with significant games played. And so they've all shown an ability to contribute. So moving forward, do you expect all of these guys to contribute at the same level? Do you expect Brad Stevens to now say, all right, we've gotten through the crappy part of the schedule. We're going to since we have time to practice and rest, we're going to play some of these guys more minutes, and maybe some of these contributors are going to get some DMPs. What do you expect from the bench moving forward?
Probably similar. Brad's always been a guy who has limited minutes for his top starters. He's never going to be a guy who runs his stars into the ground. That's just not who he is. He wants to keep guys fresh. He wants to keep guys in the right physical mind state. Yeah, nice
That's
word
good.
Choice there, Jay. Yeah, the physical mind state. but yeah, so I wouldn't expect things to change too much. I think one thing to look at over the rest of the season is Terry Rozier. I'm intrigued by Terry Rozier's last 2 or 3 weeks. I think he might be starting to figure it out. He's always been a guy who his fluid movements just and his jump shot form and some stretches he goes on with his jump shot, some stretches he goes on within games kind of leads you to believe there was more to what he was giving. And the last 2 or 3 weeks, he's been giving all of it. And so I want to see what he does. Marcus Smart, obviously still not particularly gifted at putting the ball in the basket, either from inside the arc or outside the arc. But he's really developed into one hell of a pick and roll playmaker, which is it's been cool to watch because he's really developed a lot in that sense since he first came into the NBA. Like he could barely do it when he first came in the NBA. Now he's a maestro. And then Tice is just solid, man. I love watching Tice play. He just does solid things every possession. And then, yeah, they found a lot of solid guys. Their bench is just like all defense, whether it's Ojale or Tice, Smart, Rozier. Like they're not always going to get buckets, but they're always, always, always going to be disruptive and into guys. And I think Brad says it all the time, like to have three guys, whether it's Smart, Rozier, or Larkin, who can get into you and who can change the flow of a game by pressuring up on you and by pushing the pace, that's really helped them with the second unit because that group doesn't always score. But if you need energy, if you need stops, they're going to come in and they're going to come in and blast teams with energy.
Yeah, I will agree on the giving Tita Rozier the shout out. I think the past 3 weeks have been the best few weeks of his career. He has, I think, played with good pace. He has played with a good awareness of what he needs to do on the floor. And he's not being too fancy. So I think Rozier has been a very big part of the Celtics' success, especially the last 6 games. They have the 6-game win streak. And there were a few games there that they maybe should have lost, but Rozier has played exceptionally well. And honestly, I've not been a Rozier fan up until, like, I played along with the Tito stuff, but the past few weeks, I'm like, all right, he's really showing that thing. When Brad Stevens says that Rozier could be a starter in the NBA, like, I over the past few weeks, it's very much been evident that Rozier has the ability to be a starter on NBA teams. So
yeah. And I think one guy we haven't talked about yet who I think might be like not the biggest X factor. I feel like that's such a cliche term. But somebody who I don't think we've seen the best of yet is Marcus Morris. Marcus Morris has been in and out of the lineup. He's had minutes restrictions the whole season when he's played. He hasn't been able to play back-to-backs yet. Like, he hasn't been able to find his rhythm because of so many factors that are out of his control, whether it's the knee or whatever. He just keeps finding setbacks. And I want to see what he does with a little bit of rhythm, what he does once he gets off the minutes restriction, what he does if he can get a little bit healthy. Because I think deep in the playoffs especially, like against Cleveland, when they go 5 out, or let's say the Celtics somehow win the East, if you run into Golden State or Houston, Marcus Morris is going to need to be in the starting lineup. He's going to need to play big minutes. The Celtics are going to need to have his switching. They're going to need to have his playmaking. They're going to need to have his bench scoring when he plays with the second unit. They're going to need a lot of what he brings. And he hasn't always been good. His shot selection has been suspect. He's had stretches where he hasn't been good. He's had stretches, though, where he's carried the Celtics. And you can see what it could be like sometimes. Maybe he's just going to be a streaky guy because he takes a lot of ill-advised shots, takes a lot of tough shots, rather.
Contested mid-range shots.
Yeah, mid-range mook. He cracks me up. It's so funny, too, because, you know, Jason Tatum came in and the Celtics made a big deal about telling him, don't shoot mid-range shots. Like, you're going to be a three-point shooter. You're going to get to the hoop. Like Brad said, I spent all summer trying to tell him what a good shot was. And then Marcus Morris is like, oh yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Watch this, Brad. and he's very talented at creating his own shot. And I think the second unit, because of they don't have a lot of scorers in that unit, they need some of that. A guy who can go get his own bucket, even if it's not in the most efficient way, that's valuable. But more valuable is the switching and the versatility, the defensive versatility and the athleticism that the Celtics can have when they have Marcus Morris out there and Horford and Tatum and Brown and Kyrie. Those lineups can be really athletic, really switchy, really, really, really tough to score on. But Morris has to get right, I think, for all those lineups to work as well as they could. And I think he's the one guy that they haven't really gotten his potential out of yet. Obviously, the young guys are still growing. Tatum, Brown, Rozier, Smart, all the young guys are still growing, and they'll get better just because of development. But Marcus Morris is the one guy I think they haven't gotten the best out of yet just because of other factors that he can't control, that the Celtics coaching staff can't control. It's just that knee needs to get better so that he can kind of round into shape and really give them, I think he gives them another dynamic, like post score, outside score. He does a lot of things for them. Obviously, he doesn't always do it in the most efficient way, but he can really help them in a lot of ways. He's the one guy that I'm looking at, and I think they need more out of him in the second half.
Let me ask you this, because there's been a big movement online about the Celtics luxury tax and Morris being the guy that might be potentially moved to avoid a luxury tax situation. So do you think when the playoffs start that Marcus Morris is on this team?
Yes, absolutely. What do you do if you don't have Marcus Morris on the team? Tell me that. Who do you start against the Cleveland Cavaliers when they have Kevin Love and they have Jay Crowder and they have LeBron James and they have Isaiah Thomas and they have J.R. Smith? Who do you start against that five-out lineup? Are you going to start Aaron Baines? Because Aaron Baines will get tortured by that lineup. So you have to have Marcus Morris. You have to have that extra wing. I think he's necessary for this team. Maybe they make a move this summer. But for this team right now, they need Marcus Morris. They need that wing. And I think he's really important for them against the better teams that they're going to play in the playoffs.
I don't disagree. Alternate take is that they don't face Cleveland until the conference finals. And at that point, maybe Gordon Hayward is back and Gordon Hayward becomes the answer. And you move Morris in a luxury tax saving move in the anticipation of Hayward coming back.
But how much value does he have? How much more value does he have?
I don't
now
know. I'm just throwing shit out there. I don't know. I think the real answer is that the Celtics do not expect to win the NBA Finals this year. That Gordon Hayward is much more valuable coming back next season, and Marcus Morris is not necessarily, like, you're right. You're right in saying everything you said about Marcus Morris, except that that's a win now kind of attitude, and that Danny Ainge will say, I don't care about winning necessarily now because Gordon Hayward is hurt, and even if he comes back, we're not going to do anything. Let's worry about next year. and let's prolong what we have right now with these Celtics. So trading Morris for nothing, a pick, a whatever, however they have to do it, that makes more sense than bringing Morris along for the playoff ride. If you don't have to do that, and you don't have to pay that money, then don't do it. So I just feel like there's an element of saving money, and that may supersede whatever we think as Celtics fans when it comes to the Celtics. Look, they're on a pace to win 60-plus games. People are talking about an NBA Finals berth, and Danny Ainge is going to be like, you know what? That's not very realistic. We got to take it a step back. We're going to trade Morris for nothing to save our luxury tax because we want to make sure we can pay other people 2 or 3 years from now. So I'll just say that I don't think Morris is on this team come playoff time.
Ooh.
We'll leave it at that. So we'll leave it at that. So before we're going to wrap up. We've been on the show for about an hour. We got to wrap this thing up. It's halftime in the season, and the one question is, where do you think the season ends? What's the end for the Boston Celtics, Jay?
Conference finals, they lose to Cleveland. LeBron is too much. Isaiah pointing at his wrist. And they're I don't think they're going to be able to score with Cleveland in the conference finals.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I agree. I think that's pretty much where it's going to be. I think it's going to be a much more competitive series. I think it'd probably be Cavs in 6 or 7. But I reserve the right to change that. If Gordon Hayward is back in the second round, like I think he might be, then I think the Celtics will lose in the NBA Finals. Either way, it's another round. And look, it's still pretty good. With the Gordon Hayward injury, the fact that we're even considering these possibilities is amazing. And
yeah, and I do think they're a better matchup for Cleveland this year because they're more athletic, they're switchier, they're longer, they're a much better defense, number one defense in the league. They have a lot of ways now that they can attack Cleveland in different ways than they did before. Like, Cleveland's an older roster. Cleveland is an aging roster. What makes Cleveland special is they have LeBron James. And now that Isaiah's back and looks like Isaiah, now they have LeBron and Isaiah, they're going to be able to score like hell. And I just don't know if the Celtics defense can stop them when they're at their best, and if the Celtics can score enough to stay with them in a 7-game series. We'll see, though. I want to see that so bad. I want to see Kyrie versus Isaiah. I want to see Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum against LeBron. I want to see all of that.
That would be so amazing. Be so good.
Feed it to me. Feed it to me.
That would be so good. All right. That has been our season halftime show. Hope you enjoyed it. We're the Rain and Jays, John Corrales, Jay King. Again, on Twitter, @RedsArmy_John, @ByJKing. If you are a subscriber to the podcast, please give us a rating, a 5-star rating, and give us a good review. If you're not a subscriber to the podcast, go ahead and subscribe. Hit that button. You've listened to us for about an hour. This is what we give you Monday through Friday, and we're going to be here Monday through Friday, even though the Celtics somehow only have one game this week. One! That's very unusual for the Celtics this season, and it's in the middle of the day on a Thursday for us, but they're playing in London, and that's a normal time in London, and I've never been to London, so I don't know what normal is there. So, whatever. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you subscribe. I hope you give us a 5-star rating. I hope you give us a good review. Thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On Celtics Podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.